providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Here to wrap up the weekend edition of the KE Report, we are now chatting with Adrian Day, president of Adrian Day Asset Management. Now, Adrian, just as we started off with pretty much every segment this weekend, and it felt like every segment this week, I do want to ask you about the general bounce that we have seen in markets. It hasn't just been isolated to one market. It's been pretty much across the board where a bit more risk tolerance has come into investors' minds. It has everybody wondering, is there truly a bottom in place for markets? Are we going to continue to see more money put to work? Or, quite frankly, is this just going to be another bear market rally or dead cat bounce within what already has been a 7 month long plus pullback all this year? We've already seen a couple bounces this year, two in particular that have taken the markets up about 10 to 11%. This rally has taken markets up broadly around 12%, so right in that same range as the earlier bounces. Adrian, give us your takeaway. Is a bottom truly in place for the markets, or again, is this just another bear market rally or dead cat bounce?
Yeah, well, of course, and thank you for having me. Good morning. Well, we never know for sure, of course, but you know, my sense would be that we are in a bear market, and if that's the case, this is simply a bear market rally. As you mentioned, bear market rallies are frequent. Any time we've had a bear market in the past, there have been many rallies. And I think, you know, just back to the dot-com bust, you know, the rally lasted, what, 2.5 years, but during that time, there were five rallies. Bear market rally being defined as more than 10% bounce. So, you know, rallies in a bear market are usual and are frequent. Seeing the market bounce, the S&P I'm looking at now, seeing the S&P bounce from, you know, June, early June, mid-June, I guess, about 12% or more than 12% now, and it's coming up to what I would call a soft ceiling. It's obviously not a hard ceiling, but it's where the rally petered out in May. It's the bottom that we saw in March a few times before it was finally broken. So, you know, it's a reasonable level to think, but we're very close. We could be close to the end of our rally. You know, 4,200 on the S&P is what I would target. And one of the reasons that I think we're still in a bear market is because the Fed has not finished tightening. We've talked about just how hawkish they are or are not in the past. And to remind listeners, I don't think they're being very hawkish at all. But nonetheless, they have not ended that process yet. And yet the market valuations are still very high. You know, we're selling at over 20 times earnings multiple on the S&P right now. That does not sound like a bear market bottom to me, not at all.
Well, Adrian, it seems like things were just so oversold that, you know, most of these bear market rallies start with a short covering rally first where the shorts cover. And then you see a little life, like you say, maybe 10%. And it did accelerate after the FOMC meeting and the Powell press conference when he seemed to indicate that next year they'd be wrapping up and maybe even indicated some people thought that they may go back to rate cuts next year. There was also that bad GDP number, second quarter of U.S. growth negative, and that just kind of solidified people's belief that while the Fed is still hiking and still has maybe a few more hikes to go, that they're kind of getting things more normalized and they're not going to be as aggressive. Do you think that's enough that would even be able to get markets going anyways? Or what fundamentally has to change in your view to see the markets, the general markets or the commodities rally and for it to stick?
Well, absolutely. If the Fed were to pause, they don't even have to pivot, but just pause or signal an end to the rate hikes, I think that would be sufficient to get the market going. And as you say, Powell at his press conference, it wasn't in the official statement, but you normally get the more interesting stuff in the press conference anyway. He did, as you say, give some pretty dovish comments, which frankly was a bit surprising. And also the fact that the Fed, that he said the Fed will no longer give, you know, longer term guidance, but they'll play it meeting to meeting, depending on what data comes in. That sounds very much to me like they're sort of getting ready to to change direction. And so the market definitely reacted to that. But you probably noticed in the last week, really, since that press conference, we've had 5, 6, maybe even 7 current Federal Reserve officials, as well as Bill Dudley, the former New York Fed chief, come out saying, we haven't finished yet. Bullard said it today. You know, we haven't finished yet. We're going to bring inflation down to 2%. We're determined to do it, blah, blah, blah. So I think that's a little bit of walking back or clarifying, if you want, what the message of Powell left. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not a big Fed supporter, needless to say. But I'm not in the camp, I've not been in the camp all year that thinks the Fed's going to pivot at the first, you know, at the first sign of trouble. But I suspect that by the end of this year or early next year, we'll be seeing a pause from the Fed. I mean, the economy is just, despite what they say about not being in a recession, both the Fed and the White House, The economy is slowing pretty dramatically. And, you know, Powell and the other Fed members, I'm not talking about Biden here, but just Powell and the other Fed members, I mean, they're not stupid. They can see that the economy's slowing. And so when they say, oh, well, you know, we're not technically in a recession because there's a lot of other things that go into a recession. You can't have a recession when unemployment rate is so low. And for Powell to say that the labor market is strong right now is really quite preposterous. But again, he's not stupid. He has to know it. So the unemployment rate is low, but the participation rate has declined. The number of job openings has declined dramatically. The number of layoffs, new claims for unemployment, has gone up significantly more than expected. So all of these are indications that the employment picture is changing. And then you have companies from Amazon, Google, Facebook, Starbucks, all talking about hiring pauses or even layoffs. And they all use different words. You know, the high tech companies don't say we're going to lay people off. They have, I think Google has something called a simplicity program, which is a euphemism for, you know, cutting people, and everybody knows it. Anyway, my point is that the employment picture is changing dramatically. And if all you look at is the unemployment number, you are looking at the past, you're looking at what's happened. And that, frankly, is one of the Fed's big problems. When you're data dependent, you're always looking at the past. You're looking at what's happened. But apart from that, you know, you only have to look at history. And, you know, people say you can't have a recession when unemployment is so low. I mean, the White House has said that, Powell said it at the press conference, and many other Fed people have said it. They've said with unemployment so low, there's no way this is a recession. Well, you can go all the way back to 1947, and every single recession, unemployment was very low at the beginning of a recession. And of course, it shot up during a recession. So, I mean, it's just, you know, and Powell has got to know that. He's not stupid. But I don't know whether they think they can continue to fool the public. I'm sorry, I'm going on to another Fed rant. So let's get back to markets.
Back to the markets then here, Adrian. Look, no one's denying that I think the economies, if not already in a recession, are heading down that route, and the job market, even the Fed is starting to say that they are paying attention to it. Job market has been weakening a little bit. But again, back to these markets, it's been a broad-based rebound. Just like it's been a broad-based sell-off this year, the markets that have arguably outperformed have been the tech sector, which took it the hardest on the downside. The commodities, those have also bounced. But again, just hand-in-hand with the markets, I personally haven't noticed too many sectors or any individual sectors that are truly outperforming during this rebound, meaning that investors are showing a bit more aggressive nature in those sectors. Have you noticed any sectors that have outperformed to the upside that have looked stronger to you during this rebound?
To be honest, no, I haven't. I mean, what I'm looking at very much right now, the only broad sectors I can see that I think are worth buying now for a sort of 1 or 2 year horizon would be the gold and silver stocks and some of the resources. You know, I like the copper stocks.
Now, why do you say that, Adrian? Get into why you think those will outperform to the upside when, quite frankly, they've just followed the market.
Okay, so typically in a market decline, gold stocks go down with the market, and frequently they will go down ahead of the broad market and they will go down further than the broad market. And we certainly saw that in the second quarter. The XAU, the gold and silver stocks, fell more than the S&P. But typically, you know, again, looking at 2020, 2002, 2008, 1987, typically after a sharp decline in the market, the gold and silver stocks rebound further than the broad market. Now, it certainly hasn't happened yet, and that's largely, I think, because of the dollar. You know, the dollar's been a headwind. Gold is down. Gold itself is down about 6% this year. The dollar's up about, well, it was up about 14%, but it's less now. So given the headwind of the dollar, you know, gold has held up well. But I think the gold stocks will turn when gold turns meaningfully. And again, that was certainly the case in you know, 2020, 2009, and the other dates that I mentioned earlier. Gold moved up, and then the gold stocks rebounded. So, you know, the big question to me is the dollar, I mean, there's two big questions. One is when the Fed pauses or even pivots, that would be very positive for gold, as well as the stock market. The other factor that would see gold move, obviously, is the dollar. And we know the dollar's been very strong recently. By recently, I mean the last several months, based primarily, you know, on the rate differential, with the U.S. rates being higher than Europe, Japan, and other alternatives, and the differential getting even wider until recently. But, you know, in the last few weeks, we've seen the ECB raise rates. The Bank of England is expected to raise rates again today. Australia is going to raise rates again today. So that rate of change is beginning to change. The differential is still in favor of the dollar, but the rate of change is beginning to change. And so I think we've probably seen the high for the dollar for at least the time being. That will certainly help gold, no question, because that's been what's really helped gold. And it's significant that the rally on, you know, Pelosi's visit to Taiwan, the dollar rally, has been fairly muted. And, you know, China making, you know, doing war games and making threats, you would have thought would be seen as a reasonably significant geopolitical risk. And yet the dollar didn't really rally much, certainly not as much as when Russia invaded Ukraine. So I suspect that the dollar rally that we've seen, the long-term dollar rally, is running out of steam here. And that'll be very positive for gold. But the gold stocks really aren't going to turn up significantly or meaningfully until gold turns up, frankly.
Well, Adrian, when gold does turn up and it starts dragging the whole sector with it, including silver, a lot of times we'll see the largest miners move first because the capital flows will go into the big boys, you know, the larger producers, the royalty companies that are kind of safer names, and then it'll start working its way down the food chain into the development stories and then eventually down into the explorers. When you're getting positioned and trying to, I guess, take advantage of the low pricing, would you be moving into those larger cap names first and then gradually work down the food chain? Or are you looking at it that some of these juniors are so completely beaten up and taken out to the woodshed that they actually look pretty safe to get into based on where they're trading in valuations right now?
Yeah, I am putting most of the money into the larger cap stocks right now for the reasons you've mentioned. They are the first, typically, they're the first to move. They're the more certain to move. That's another important factor. You know, if you buy just to name five names, if you buy, you know, Agnico, Barrick, Franco, Osisko, and Royal Gold, you can be very, very certain that if gold goes to 2,500, your stocks, or 2,000, your stocks are going to move. If you buy, you know, consolidated moose pasture, it may or may not go up. So the big cap stocks are more certain to move, and they're also, for the reasons you said, the flows, the first to move. But having said that, as you say, some of the juniors are so very, very undervalued that we're buying some of those as well. But I'm still focusing on the big cap names. And I think there'll be time to buy the big cap names, and if we get rallies, to start trimming some of those, and there'll still be time to move into the juniors.
So, Adrian, how aggressive have you been then? With your positioning, what have you been positioning in? Can you give us some insights into how you're playing, again, right now, this potential bear market bounce for markets across the board?
Across the board, outside of gold and silver? I mean, we're pretty loaded up on gold and silver stocks. We have a full allocation there.
Have you been fully allocated over the last few months to a year? Or have you added allocation?
No. We've been reasonably fully allocated. I mean, when people say, oh, you've got 8% cash, say, yeah, but that means we're 92% invested. So we've been reasonably fully invested for the last year, but we did raise money, I have to say, in March and April. Never enough, of course. And we put it all back to work, you know, obviously, in retrospect, too soon. So we've been fully invested for the last, you know, 6 or 8 weeks. If we want to buy something now, I have to sell something. That's the gold and silver allocation. Not so the other commodities, and certainly not so the broad markets. If this is a bear market, then there's certainly a reasonable probability that the bear market rally has certainly seen the most of what we're going to see. And again, as I said, the valuations are not low. I always look at valuations. Valuations, as we've discussed before, they don't tell you a high valuation doesn't mean the market's about to crash, just as a low valuation doesn't tell you about that it's going to go up. But this is certainly not a bear market bottom at 20 times earnings. So we're not buying broadly, but selectively. Outside of the resources, there are some interesting and attractive buys. I mean, one stock we've been buying is Altria, you know, the old Philip Morris, which is yielding about, MO is a symbol, which is yielding over 8% now. It's almost 9%, in fact. No, it's 8.2, sorry. So that's a nice yield, which is as certain as any yield in this market. You know, the stock fell when the FDA said they were going to ban Juul, you know, that vaping company Philip Morris, or Altria, I'm sorry, owns about 20% of Juul. So that hurt the stock. We're buying opportunistically when we see things happen. I mean, China and Hong Kong, buying China stocks in Hong Kong right now, we don't buy directly in the China exchanges. I think is there are some good buys there. After, you know, the market has gone down significantly on the you know, Pelosi visit. So we even bought some more Alibaba yesterday. We've been trading that stock a little bit, not always successfully. Well, our trades have been successful. Unfortunately, we started buying a long time ago when it was much higher. But, you know, that to me is an attractive buy right now after the big drop.
Well, Adrian, what about in the resource space, just as we wrap up, we get a lot of questions about oil stocks. Have they topped, or is there more life to them? Copper, I know that's something that you do follow. There's some other base metals that have been interesting this year, like nickel, or some of the platinum, palladium, you know, differential looks interesting in platinum's favor of palladium. Do you have any thoughts on just any other resource area that has your attention?
Yeah, no, definitely. Well, oil, you mentioned oil first of all. So, you know, oil has a huge risk right now. And this seems odd to talk about it as a risk, but the risk is the peace breaks out. because oil obviously got a, I like oil. I like the fundamentals of oil, you know, and we could talk about that for a long time. I like the oil market and I like it for a multi-year period. But the oil price and the oil stocks had a huge rally at the beginning of March after the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And so the big risk now is that if peace breaks out, I think sanctions on oil and gas will be dropped quickly, even if they're not dropped on other things. They'll be dropped on oil and gas because of the West needs Russia's oil and gas. And at that point, the oil stocks would fall. And I think they'd fall fairly meaningfully. I mean, oil would probably drop back to 80, 75, something like that. Now, that will probably be short-lived. Not probably. It would be, in my view, be short-lived. And that will be the time. That will be the time to jump in and buy. But we're not buying now. But, you know, broad-based, yeah, we like, you know, potash is good, even though that obviously had a good bounce from Russia. The Russian invasion of Ukraine. I wouldn't buy the potash companies. Again, I would wait until there's peace in the region and stocks drop and then buy it. But if you buy a company, let's say like Altius, which is diversified among many commodities and has, you know, some potash, you know, that's something we're buying now. Thermal coal is actually quite attractive right now. I'm not sure for a multi-year period, but certainly for the next 6-12 months, because the world suddenly realizes that windmills and solar don't cut it. And without Russian oil and gas, Europe is actually turning back to coal, which is really ironic when, you know, the whole green policy got us into this mess. Now they're going to one of the dirtiest coal fuel sources out there, energy sources out there. But anyway, some of the coal companies look good. But broadly speaking, I would say that I'm positive on most commodities. I'm positive on the whole resource complex, but just picking times with one or two, particularly oil and gas, we're holding off on.
All right, Adrian, thank you as always for your time. Always interesting to hear what you're investing in. I always read over the notes that you send to all of your clients because it does cover a wide range of stocks. We do talk a lot about resources with you, but you invest in some high dividend paying stocks, some much more well-known stocks, and I find that all very interesting in terms of what you write to clients. Again, Adrian, thank you for your time. Everybody, thanks for tuning in on this weekend show. I hope you all enjoyed this weekend show. And hey, I hope this rally keeps going for the markets. But boy, oh boy, we are getting a lot of comments. It is saying this is, again, nothing more than a dead cat bounce, bear market rally. Again, it's also happening in the middle of summer. So we'll take that with a grain of salt. Everybody, thank you again for tuning into this weekend show. We'll be back with you next week. Please, as always, keep in touch with Shad and I through email. We love hearing from all of you, and we'll talk to you all on Monday.